This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio, 98.3 and 102.1. Sounds from the recent climate conference in France, and I think we have some others as well, or at least we'll be hearing them later, some chants from various indigenous people. So when you hear those later, you're still listening to The Other Side of the News. It's Dr. Bob Fetrakis in the studio with Mark Stansberry and Yoshi Furuhashi, a well-known local activist. Let me know what was going on over there, Yoshi.
Glad to be here. And I just want to say that we were so excited about, you know, having been able to participate in marches of, hundreds of thousands of people all fighting for the same goal of fighting against, you know, uncontrolled capitalism destroying the planet. Mark,
any thoughts on it?
Yeah, we come from the perspective that we were going to go there to hit the streets, and the other folks were going to do the 40,000 people that were at the COP 21, the official.
And explain that. You called it the COP. What's that stand for the listeners?
Yeah, that's the countries of partnership. Basically, it's the 21st conference since the Kyoto Agreement. So it's been back, about early 90s when the Kyoto came into agreement that internationally we had to respond to some kind of the global climate issues. So. This was the 21st, and there was finally an agreement. This one was the first time that the 195-plus countries had decided that they could come to an agreement. In Copenhagen, the COP 19 decided that there were no agreements at that point. So this was a major accomplishment on international scale. But once you start looking at the details, you realize that the COP 21 probably was more of a masquerade party by the global rich to sort of forestall any real change in the systems that we need to be talking about.
Now, Yoshi, you study and write about economics. Can you separate the environment or climate change from the economic systems prevalent in the world today?
Well, that's really not possible, and just 2 weeks before the climate conference, major attacks by terrorists against, people in Paris happened. And even though some of the, bigger environmental organizations always wanted to focus only on one issue, the environmental issues, the rest of the world doesn't really allow us to separate, environmental issues from capitalism and capitalism trying to control the entire planet, and including the military means, which we, only creates, negative responses, violent responses often, such as, and actions of, terrorists that attacked Paris, So even from the get-go, we had to respond to that. And in response to the terrorist attacks, the government of France essentially prohibited any citizen action. They responded by declaring state of emergency, and the only, even though that...
So let me stop you there. When you were there, was there a state of emergency?
Yes, exactly. And
Still is.
Yeah. All the actions we have taken essentially were taken not only in response to the climate emergency, but also the against the state of emergency declared by the government of France, you know. And that really shows that, you know, priorities of the government of France. The government of France wanted to create a stage for, you know, international and capitalist governments to, you know, and present, you know, and a facade of, you know, harmony and illusion of actions as if they were doing something, you know. And but they didn't want the voices of citizens projecting, you know, other perspectives, you know, saying that, you know, actions taken by capitalist governments are by nature limited because they fail to limit, you know, and the growth of, you know, capitalism growth of, you know, capitalism based solely upon the idea of producing more and more profits, not meeting the needs of the people, you know, and but the voices of the citizens, you know, and taking actions for the planet, for the needs of the people, was not the ones wanted by the government. So we had to first create a space in which we can act.
Mark, were your marches all legal?
The first one, the November 29th, was the first day when we were planning on marching from the Place de la République to the Place de Nation. That was prohibited by the French government. So instead, we decided to do other things, and it was a street action, but
creating human chain,
created a human chain of people between the two plazas. But then that ended up with the young folks are from the Republic Plaza. They wanted to march, so it ended up a pretty a strong standoff between the military and police. And the young activists, and they were tear gassed us. They closed off the plaza.
Yes,
and here's
a
sound
video
of it.
Of the, you know, the people getting tear gassed by the police in Paris, you know, trying to prevent you know, young people from taking the streets, you know, according to their own plan, as opposed to being limited by the police, you know, kettling us in, essentially into Place de la République.
Yeah, there was a 2-hour standoff, and we did march a little bit, but then the day after that is when the French government allowed the following day's actions to take place. So on December 12th, which was the Red Lines actions, we ended up having hundreds of thousands of people marching from the action on the Grand Avenue near the Arc de Triomphe and marched over to the Eiffel Tower. So within those 2-3 weeks, it was went from no street actions to major street action. It was the first action since that attack in November 13th. So we were able to challenge that state of emergency that still exists in France. But they did arrest many people, house arrests. But in France, there's over 3,000 people that are on house arrest for a lot of different reasons. But climatologists or the ecologist action people were about 167 people that have been on arrest. And then they were let go as soon as the COP21 was over. So famous quote back then was, don't trust any cop. So there was, you know, using two double entendre of what COP is, COP the 21, but also cops in general. So,
go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to sort of add to that by saying that, well, it's important not to, you know, submit to the government's, you know, dictates, you know, and we are, even though that the government doesn't want any disruption, you know, direct actions, you know, and especially pushed by young people can expand, you know, the new spaces, you know, more spaces for action, more spaces for other perspectives, more spaces for other voices. And there are some, let's say, older, you know, more established environmentalists, you know, who are a little bit, you know, scared of, you know, taking such direct actions, but we just want to emphasize that, well, like, there is need for that, especially given the climate in which we live.
Yes.
So was there space available for a discussion that says that the modern corporate capitalist system and state capitalism in China and what's going on with oligarchs out of Russia is non-sustainable, that the planet cannot sustain that type of economics and things need to be scaled back, and maybe this fetishism of commodities and constant new models may not be the best for this planet.
There is a huge gap between rhetoric and actions, on the part of the government. And the rhetoric on the part of the government has improved in the sense. I think they are trying to respond to the pressure from the streets, so they are at least saying
Olan is a socialist, did you note? I mean, what's his position?
I wouldn't call him socialist. In France, the kind of politics represented by him and his government is called social liberalism. And I think that's basically what sums up, his stance, And so rhetoric is better now, but that doesn't mean that the action is better. In some ways, Paris Agreement is a kind of retreat from the Kyoto in the sense that there is no even pretense to create, binding mechanisms that compel governments to take certain actions and not others. Now it's all, promises on the part of the, each government. So in a way that everything is now returned back to us, in each national sphere, So what we can compel each national government is what we can achieve, So in terms of internationalism, and Paris actually is less than Kyoto, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of promises out there. There was a lot of euphoria. Hollande and the other leadership of COP21, you should have heard and saw their TV expressions of a celebration. They were all hugging each other at 7:36 on December 12th when the accord finally came through. They were so excited that they even had an agreement. But then when you get down to the base of it, there's all promises. It's sort of like an abusive spouse that promises not to hit you again. I mean, they're beautiful promises, but is that sickness able to come over? We have a sickness called capitalism. We have a sickness of capital-intensive, capital-expansive development models that we're not sure that those promises will be able to be kept. There are the Millennium Development Goals have been replaced at about a month before this gathering happened in France with Sustainable Development Goals that really are now hyping more the idea of eliminating the inequality. So equality is much more of a challenge for them, but also this climate aspect. Climate justice was brought into these SDGs, and don't know where they're going. Could be a whole other facade that's been created, but they do heighten the attention for equality and for climate justice within those development goals now, so mm-hmm. Sustainable development goals.
Well, one of the oddities seems to be that at the very moment there's these agreements, these broad general agreements, the price of oil is crashing, mm-hmm. thus making it cheaper and mm-hmm. more affordable mm-hmm. at the very time objectively mm-hmm. renewables are less expensive. It almost seems like a last desperate and polluting, gas by the oil and gas companies that really could take most of the planet down. Is that the case, Yoshi?
I agree. And this is a very ironic moment. And even though Obama is supposed to be more of the environmental president compared to his Republican predecessor, and it's ironic that under his presidency, shale oil achieved its acme of development, and it's setting the new model of oil drilling and oil consumption and oil transportation and internationally, and the U.S. model of shale drilling is expanding internationally too, including in Europe, I think, to a certain extent. And so we are at a very dangerous moment. And just at the moment when the new agreement came on, it became much easier for, the oil industry, to expand, And since oil is in such glut now that there is a push, inside of the United States to export, surplus oil into the world, So this is the dangerous moment we live in. And so this basically shows us that it's not possible to combine commitments to the environmental justice and environmental improvements, and at the same time as keeping the system of capitalism in place, you know. And system of capitalism depends upon, you know, all the corporations and you know, and being as free as possible from the regulations, you know, and all the corporations being free to so-called externalize, you know, and the costs of repairing the damages they cause to the environment and to the people. And system of capitalism also depends on that the economy expanding more and more, and usually depending on that, you know, people consuming more and more. And even us, the working class people, depend on the expansion of the economy too. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the jobs, you know. So it, some environmentalists say that we can pursue so-called degrowth and inside the framework of capitalism, but I believe that's not possible. We have to work toward another system of, you know, production that focuses on human needs, what we need, you know, and instead of, you know, the needs of the corporations and their profits.
Agreed.
Well, part of that, well, let's do an ID break here quickly. This is WCRS 98.3 and 102.1. I'm in the studio with Mark Stansberry and Yoshi Furuhashi, who have come back from France with their perspective on what it's like to be on the streets for climate change. So, you know, when I was looking at climate change and what we can do, at the same time I'd run across a old quote from Henry Ford, who said that cars in the future will grow out of the ground, right? And he was talking about hemp, right? And how, you know, he had taken a sledgehammer to a hemp mobile. But when I look at the United States and the type of mining that's going on, and, you know, the mountaintop removals in Tennessee and the rape of the environment in particularly places like Africa, it seems like the predatory extraction of resources is probably more dominant now than any time in history, Mark.
Yeah, and it's, as we were saying, it's a paradoxical world. When we start talking about the Iran deal, and you have Secretary Kerry talking about just yesterday that the deal brings us all the way from mining all the way to waste management, and in between that whole thing, that we can follow where that comes from out of the mine. If we could do that with the fossil fuel, I mean, if we can do it with the nuclear issue, we could do it with the fossil fuel. And if we start looking at that, then the whole agreement could come crashing down in that the corporate lies that it masks. It's very interesting to sort of see that paradox that we're living at this point. So, yeah, you're very true. The extractive nature of this capital, as I say, expansive model that we've been living under for the Industrial Revolution, the whole 100-plus years, has to come crashing down itself, and we have to come with a whole new way. Global South need to be the leaders. We have to listen to the indigenous folks once and for all. We have to listen to people of color that have been abused by this system for so long that we're going to have to understand that the white privilege that so many people talk about, that it actually is killing us as well. That privilege of to be able to extract when we want to extract, when we're wanting to steal, when we want to expand a model of economy, a model that is developing people in an unequal stance. Those type of realities we have to be in strong resistance to build communities. We want to really look and see if Central Ohio can come together before this election and start really talking about what are some of the goals that we're talking about as a community of, you know, what's going to be a strong model for the future for this new administration. Yeah, we don't have much hope for this new administration called the Ginther thing. But we have to come up with another way, a progressive radical perspective that we can articulate clearly and forthrightly and resist and build a communities of resistance on our local level, but to tie that into international movement, to understand that the Global South have to be our leaders. We have to learn from them. The peasants and farmers, millions of them, have gone out on the streets demanding that the agricultural business, the agribusiness that has been dominating this this agricultural renaissance, is going to kill us. We're killing ourselves, our air, our land, our soil, our water. So you know, we have to really Flint, Michigan's perfect example. If we start talking about some of the real struggles,
and I heard you're talking of the lead poisoning from the water from the Flint River. So instead of getting the water from the Great Lakes, they went to the river, and clearly toxic.
Yeah, that happened because of, you know, the basic, you know, contradiction between democracy and the capitalism. You know, capitalism forces, you know, us to basically live for the needs of capitalists, not for ourselves, you know. And the people, you know, Flint basically had their democratic control taken from them. This is happening everywhere.
Yeah, an emergency, Greece. You speak of the emergency management manager.
With masks. Yeah. Taken off, you know, we're seeing a naked, you know, power grab on the part of the rich people to basically create a new kind of government that's only for the 1%, by the 1%, of the 1%.
Well, Flint to some extent is even more interesting because back in the 1950s, along with Detroit, it was one of the richest cities on the planet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the automobile industry. Yes. And really, when you look at Flint, we can look at patterns of investment and then disinvestment into a world economy. And none of that seems to have helped the people in Flint or the people, you know, where the new investment has gone in the South.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's, you know, that also focuses us to look for, you know, the ways that, you know, power that can create the change, you know. When the people in Flint and the people in the United States and people in the rest of the world were strongly able to stand up for their own rights, you know, their own, you know, better, you know, life conditions, you know, that's when the working people were strong, you know. Flint was, you know, one of the fountains of industrial capitalism, but also
well,
Flint,
they also broke the back of the capitalists in the 30s, right?
Yes,
the
exactly.
The Flint
exactly.
sit-down
that's
strikes.
That's where the also strikes. Fight Back began, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's the spirit we need to recover, you know, and it often is a case that, you know, the people in the environmental movement, the people in the labor movement are not really on the same page, you know, but that's something that needs to change, you know. Just as there is a gap between what capitalists say and what capitalists do, there is also a gap between what, you know, let's say activists say, and in terms of environment and what activists end up needing to want, and in terms of, you know, the parliamentary politics, but also in terms of, you know, like, industrial actions, you know, but we need to heal those, you know, splinters, you know, between, you know, what we are doing in the environmental sphere and what we are doing in the labor movement sphere and what we are doing in terms of the, I guess, that political participation in the official democracy, you know, and that's something that we have not been able to come up with a good solution yet, you know. Just when we were in Paris, and there was also a regional election in progress, you know, and unfortunately in those regional progress, new thing happened. The National Front, the far right neo-Nazi party, basically did better than ever before in terms of gaining votes, you know, only by Republican, you know, from the conservatives and the socialists and, you know, people to the left of them, sort of uniting and acting together, you know, that they were able to beat back the National Front a little bit in terms of the number of the seats in the regional parliaments. But that's only a kind of, the band-aid type of solution, not the real solution, you know. And so there's this problem in all these, you know, the capitalist crises and austerity policies, you know, in response to those crises, are both, you know, empowering the far right, you know, but at the same time, just that you know, the leftists and activists, you know, supporting that, you know, the you know, center left governments and center left parties, no real solution, just as was shown in the case of France, you know, and the same thing I think we can say about Democratic Party and the United States.
Hmm. Yeah, Flint's a perfect example, mm-hmm. as you say. It's historical. It's the power structure, same power structure, the power elite that brought the right to work to Michigan in general, has this disregard for workers' rights, but also the disregard for the youth, children that are drinking that lead-poisoned water. They don't give a damn, excuse me. They don't care about people. They want their profits.
And again, a lot of it to me comes back to a uniting issue like hemp. You had a petrochemical industry in the 1930s that essentially created plastic and poisons, mm-hmm. and outlawed a product that was more grassroots, mm-hmm. And that you could use and wasn't as polluting. I mean, it's still illegal. Even though you can't get high off. And there's been this tremendous war on drugs that has ravaged the urban areas and put poor and minorities in jail. And to this day, nothing seems to be being done about it. We have rivers of plastics under our ground. We've got lead in our water. And there seems to be no transition plan towards not only hemp, but renewables in general. Can the grassroots put enough pressure on the government to actually transition to a renewable economy? You'll see this much more in the Scandinavian countries or in Germany, but I don't catch any real mass movement here that is forcing these renewables that are actually more economically viable into the marketplace, and the government appears to be doing nothing.
That's one of the things that that we need to really focus on. Where is a force for change? And we first need to create the force for change, and before discussing amongst ourselves what should be
so
our
agenda. So we're talking about agency here.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
And who are these forces for change, particularly in the United States, right? This is still the largest economy.
I think there is a desire for change, and it has yet to coalesce. And a desire for changes, appear in various guises. Sometimes it appears
in small local farmers' markets.
Or the Occupy Wall Street type of, direct spontaneous actions amongst young people. And sometimes it occurs amongst, the unprecedented endorsement by CWA for, Bernie Sanders' candidacy. And he's still running as a Democrat. The very fact that such huge, powerful unions as CWA endorsed him rather than Clinton, that indicates that there are people becoming anxious and getting at the impatient and as to the status quo, But all of these people who are working at the local level, national level, international levels in on various, one-issue campaigns or, various, parliamentary political campaigns, they have yet to create a united front, change. That's something that we need to work on, I think.
And we also, you have other structures that are out there. You have Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm, you have mm-hmm. you have the other environmental justice movements that are out there that are really going forward with much, much intensity that can actually, if we can overcome some social factors that always seem to divide us, if it's not gender politics or racial politics mm-hmm. or class politics, it's the same triplets of oppression that Dr. King was talking about as we're leading up to his birthday right now.
tomorrow being that day, we got a minute here. What do you want to tell the listeners before you depart?
One thing is that we are starting to talk about doing a local Earth Day. We haven't had a really major Earth Day, activist Earth Day since 1990 here in Columbus, Ohio. So we're going to start planning that next Monday, the 25th. If you want to get part of that, that'd be great. There's also the other movement I was talking about was the immigrant rights movements that have to join in and really be part of this growing agency of resistance, these communities of resistance. And Yoshi, you can finish yourself.
One thing I want to say is that we need to have not only actions, but also thought and and a theory that allow us to figure out what exactly is wrong, what is exactly blocking us from attacking that sources of the problem. One website I want to recommend, monthlyreview.org, and it's a website for the magazine that has been at the one of the longest standing independent journals of socialism, and there are places like that on the internet where you can gain other perspectives than simply voting for always the lesser of the evils.
Well, we got to go. Yoshi with a call for praxis, theory and action.
Yes.